order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, August 4th, and I will open the work session on House Bill 5009, which is the budget bill for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Mr. Bender.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I have prepared some materials for you to help you with your work session on House Bill 5009, the budget bill for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I've tried to put everything together into two items. So one of the items is a memo to you dated with today's date that says the LFO recommendation for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And the other is just a one-page sheet with some overall budget numbers. I would like to remind the subcommittee that you've done considerable work on this budget already, and you held work sessions on June 10th and June 11th, during which you made a number of decisions regarding this budget. Basically, the scope of the decisions that you made were you made decisions on everything except the ultimate levels of general fund support that would be provided to this agency for both transfer to community colleges, for other programs, and for its operations. The work plan for today is to complete action on the budget for this agency by making decisions on the general fund support levels for the agency. In this memo, in this packet of materials that I have for you that's stapled together, it starts with a memo, a two-page memo, that covers the additional recommendations that we are asking you to consider today. It then contains attached to it a set of 5009-2 amendments that are consistent with the recommendations that you have before you. So if you approve all of these recommendations, we would also ask you to recommend that the bill be amended by the 5009-2 amendments, because they are entirely consistent with the recommendations. After that, the actual amendment language, still in the set of staple materials, I've also attached the earlier memo dated June 10th. This is just for your convenience to have this attached. This runs through and describes all of the decisions that you made during the work sessions on June 10th and 11th. This was the LFO recommendation, and you had a lot of discussion on it, but the committee record will show that all of these recommendations were eventually adopted by the committee. So there's no need to readopt those or go over those again. So those are there for you, and I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions to clarify what it is that the committee did at its earlier meetings, and to move on from there.
Questions on the earlier actions that the committee took? Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first change that we are recommending that you do, in addition to the ones that you've already done in work session on this bill, is number one on the memo, and it is a technical adjustment relating to the passage of House Bill 2197. House Bill 2197 passed this session. The governor has already signed it, so it will be law. And this is a bill that revised the timber tax system in the state of Oregon. One of the impacts of this bill was to extend the timber severance tax, which had been slated to sunset. Part of the monies from the timber severance tax under House Bill 2197 are distributed to the community college, to the department for distribution to community colleges in the Community College Support Fund. The amount of funds that House Bill 2197 will provide for community colleges this biennium is forecast to equal $221,000. LFO is recommending that you allow the community colleges to spend this money, which is dedicated for their purposes. And our recommendation is that you increase the other funds expenditure limitation in the state support for community colleges program area that you established at your earlier work session by an additional $221,000 to allow revenue provided by House Bill 2197 to be distributed to community colleges. With this adjustment, the total amount of timber tax revenues for community colleges this biennium will be $316,292.
Mr. Bender, would it work in the from the framework of having the motion if we just simply went through these packages and if there was no, if everyone was in agreement by adopting the dash twos into the bill, would we be accepting the recommendations?
Certainly. You can accept them. Just take one vote at the end.
I think I choose to do that. Certainly. And committee members, as we work our way through this and you have questions or if you have disagreement with the recommendations, please have it be known. Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Recommendation two is a recommendation that was in the co-chair's budget that they released earlier during the session to supply an additional $10.7 million of general fund to enhance support to the Community College Support Fund. During earlier meetings and discussions on this bill, the subcommittee reviewed the impact of including district property tax collections in the distribution formula for the Community College Support Fund. And you heard from the department that it had established a work group to review the distribution formula. There's been a number of members of the subcommittee have been working in some depth with the department to address these concerns and to develop a mechanism to provide incentive to revise the distribution formula and to resolve outstanding issues. In order to do this, the recommendation is that this $10.7 million, which is within the amount in the co-chair's budget, be appropriated to the emergency board for allocation to the department after the State Board of Education has taken action on a revised distribution formula. And there is an actual budget note here to further clarify what the department is expected to do and what the emergency board, what your intent is when this issue comes before them during the interim. If I may just read that, if that's okay. The budget note says that the subcommittee approves a $10.7 million general fund appropriation to the emergency board with the special purpose of enhancing funding to the Community College Support Fund. The department, with the assistance of a group of community college presidents working to develop a new distribution formula for the Community College Support Fund, shall report to the emergency board no later than October 2003 on the distribution formula proposed by the work group for the CCSF beginning in the 2004-05 fiscal year. So that would be not the academic year that's starting this fall, but the fall that's following. The department shall, after January 1st, 2004, request that the emergency board allocate the special purpose appropriation to the Community College Support Fund after the proposed formula has been acted upon by the State Board of Education. So this, under this direction, there would be two appearances by the department before the emergency board. One, to describe what the revised formula plan is before it is implemented, and second, to request funding after the State Board of Education actually acts upon the proposal.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Senator Mezzerly.
Yes.
Senator Mezzerly?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I have a question for you on this.
Sure.
Is the makeup of the group of community college presidents appropriate in your mind? Have you had a chance to see who those presidents are going to be and what kind of product they might produce?
Yes, it is. I think it's very equal.
Okay.
Probably good we can expect.
Well, you're comfortable, Ian. Thank you.
Representative March.
If the task force came back and recommended the same formula be used again, would this freeze the money then?
The release of the money is not dependent on a particular outcome. It is only dependent on the process being completed in a timely manner.
Just the wording sounded like a new distribution formula. Could be the same one as long as it's adopted new again.
Further Thank questions you. Or comments? Please proceed, Mr. Bender. Senator Gordy, do you want us to wait for you?
No.
Okay. Please proceed.
Our third recommendation is to approve an additional $10 million in general fund support for the Community College Support Fund. This is in addition to the $10.7 million to the Emergency Board that we just discussed. These funds are now available as a result of ongoing budget discussions that have occurred since the release of the co-chair's budget. So we can recommend that to you.
Questions, comments? Please proceed. Ignore my phone.
Recommendation four is another item that was in the co-chair's budget. Because of the state's general fund shortfall, their budget suspends general fund support this biennium for the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. This would not end that program. The OICC would operate its programs at a reduced level with the other funds that are available to it from the amusement device tax and from funds received by partner agencies. The co-chair's budget does not eliminate the use of the dedication of amusement device tax monies to support this program. The subcommittee should, therefore, eliminate the general fund appropriation to the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, which is equivalent to a $390,730 reduction from the level in the governor's budget. The department should be directed to submit a policy package in its 2005-07 biennium agency request budget to restore this level of general fund support for the OICC in 05-07. That is to say, this is a suspension, not a permanent elimination, and this will come to the legislature next session as a policy package above the current service level.
Senator Masley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to refresh my memory at least, how much is left? How much will be appropriated for me? How much limitation will they have?
The amount of funds that will be available for the OICC will be approximately slightly less than $2 million.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Finally, the co-chair's budget contains, because of the state's general fund shortfall, a reduction in support for administration of $140,000 in general fund. To conform to this reduction, the subcommittee should further modify package 103, which is an agency operations package, to include a $140,000 reduction in general fund for the office operations program area.
So that completes the amendments that are contained in the dash 2 amendments.
That is correct.
Okay. I would accept the motion at this time to move the dash 2 amendments in House Bill 5009.
So moved.
We have a motion. Is there a discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to move House Bill 5009 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried.
Madam Chair, may I request also that the subcommittee do make some statement as to adoption of these recommendations, because some of the recommendations, such as the budget net language, are not contained in the amendments themselves.
I would accept a motion that the committee accept the LFO recommendations to the Department of Community College budget contained in the memo dated August 4th, 2003.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection. The motion is carried. I will carry this in the full committee and on the floor. And Senator Masley, would you carry this on the Senate floor? I'll close the work session on House Bill 5009, open a work session on House Bill 5052, which is the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The materials for this budget are very similar in structure to the materials that I gave you for the community college budget. And they consist of a memo which contains additional recommendations to supplement the actions that you took on this budget during your work sessions that you held on this budget on June 25th and 26th. We do not actually have LC amendments drafted, but that's not a problem since the only changes are numbers, and typically we don't do that. But I do have, just for your information, what the numbers would look like in this bill if you approve the particular recommendations that we have here. So that's sort of a Hanning Gross version is shown. And then finally, beyond that, there is the earlier memo, June 23rd. These are the decisions you made earlier, and these additional decisions would be beyond that.
So let's go ahead and then proceed through the decisions, and we'll kind of follow the same game plan, except we'll do the motion to accept the memo before we do.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would make a comment that I've not heard. I never thought I heard Steve say numbers don't really matter.
Just kidding, ladies.
Not what I'm saying.
They're just numbers, right?
I didn't mean to say that. Don't quote me on that.
It's too late.
That might be a sunny day. Yeah. The numbers don't really matter. Thank you, LFO.
All of these remaining decisions, as they were in the community college budget, relate to the levels of general fund support, both for the programs, in this case primarily the scholarship programs, and for the administrative costs of the agency. There is one exception, though, and that is this first recommendation, which is actually a correction of an earlier recommendation we made to you regarding DAS assessments. Back on June 25th or 26th, we had a recommendation of the changes to make to general fund and other funds for DAS assessments. I did not correctly apportion the total amount of $51,000 is the same, but I didn't correctly apportion those among the various program areas and fund types. What I would ask the committee to do is to rescind your earlier adjustment that was based on my earlier recommendation and instead adopt these reductions. Which, again, are the reductions due to the fact that the amounts in the budget to pay certain DAS assessments are higher than is now necessary because of reductions in those assessment levels.
Does anyone have any questions on this issue? Then what I would ask for is a motion to rescind the earlier DAS assessment adjustments. Senator Gordon's made the motion. Is there objection to the motion? I should have asked, is there a discussion on the motion? But this doesn't look like a group that's in the discussing mode. If there's no objections, and there is none, the motion is carried. I would ask you then to adopt the revised DAS assessment funding as stated in the LFO memo of August 4th, 2003.
So moved.
Is there a discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Recommendation two is a technical adjustment. It relates to a need to change the OSAC budget as a result of the passage of House Bill 3642 this session. That bill will transfer 90% of the May 1, 2005 balance of the Education Stability Fund to the State School Fund. Because OSAC receives some of the interest earnings on the Education Stability Fund for opportunity grants, this will reduce the amount of those monies, which come in the form of lottery funds, to the commission. So LFO is recommending that the subcommittee reduce the lottery funds expenditure limitation in the grants and scholarships program area by an additional $63,000 to adjust expenditures to equal the currently forecast lottery fund revenue. If the Education Stability Fund earnings end up exceeding what's in the current projection, the emergency board will have the option of increasing the lottery fund's expenditure limitation during the interim.
Discussion? Please proceed.
Item three The former Foster Youth Scholarship Program, which was established in 2001, provides full tuition scholarships to qualified students who had previously been under foster care. The governor's budget included $99,360 of general fund to finance this scholarship. Because of the state's general fund shortfall, the co-chair's budget suspends general fund support for this program. To conform with the suspension, the subcommittee should reduce the general fund appropriation for financial aid payments to individuals and institutions by $99,360 to suspend awards in the former Foster Youth Scholarship Program for the 03-05 biennium. Again, since this is under the co-chair's proposal as a suspension and not a permanent elimination, the agency should be directed to submit a policy package in its 05-07 biennium agency request budget to restore this level of general fund support for the former Foster Youth Scholarship Program.
Questions or comments?
A question.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bender, if you could help refresh my memory, it seems that we just recently approved a grant related to the former Foster Youth Scholarship Program. Is that ringing a bell for you or anyone else?
I'm sorry.
Senator Gordley, if I might, I do believe that we did in the full e-board through a recommendation from the Human Services Subcommittee approve a grant that related to
the same population, the same program?
It would not be the same program.
Okay.
It may be a similar population, and I do regret that I don't have information on that. I could call for one of my colleagues from the office to come in.
If we could find out if that grant, in fact, is targeted to the same population, it would be helpful at clarifying information.
Okay.
Would that be Mr. Britton?
I believe that would be Sheila Baker. So, Catherine,
yes. Would you be able to call our office and ask if Sheila Baker?
Let's proceed, if you don't mind,
yes.
Senator Gordley, and double back on this.
Please, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. The next item is the Office of Degree Authorization. The subcommittee recommended expanding the fee authority for the Office of Degree Authorization to allow the office to charge for degree validation and information requests and to relieve the general fund of responsibility for these functions. That authority, which is a statutory change, is included in Senate Bill 437B, which passed out of this committee and was today approved by the Senate and is going on to the House. The co-chair's budget reduces general fund support for the Office of Degree Authorization Policy Research Section by $200,000. To accomplish this, LFO recommends that the subcommittee reduce general fund for the Office of Degree Authorization Policy Research Program area by $200,000 and increase the other funds limitation for that same program area by $200,000. So it would be a fund shift. The other funds expenditure limitation increase will accommodate the expenditure of fee revenues to replace the reduced general fund. You should note that the agency estimates that fee revenue will be insufficient to replace this general fund reduction, and that if this is what happens, the program area may have to be cut. The agency should, however, be allowed, we recommend that the agency be allowed flexibility to designate that any other funds available to it may be used to support this program area's functions as long as the functions are connected to the activities generating the other fund revenue. To be a little more specific, if the policy research office is doing research section, is doing work relating to the private scholarship program, the agency should be allowed to use some of the fee revenues collected under that program for this entity, as well as fees that are collected and revenues collected under the federal loan guarantee program, in addition to any of the fee revenues that the ODA itself collects.
The First of all, is there discussion on the issues with the Office of Degree Authorization?
Well, Madam Chair, just to note that, just to restate that if the fee revenues are insufficient, there would be a reduction of a program or the elimination of a program. That's in fact what we're talking about.
Yes, and this would be degree validation functions and many information requests that may come to this office.
And so we need to be clear about where those requests would be dealt with if this function were in fact eliminated. And are we clear on where that function would take place, where else that function might take place or not?
There is no specific agency to which this function is transferred. The Office of Degree Authorization would be able to continue to provide the function, but they would be charging a fee for service. So if someone called to validate that a particular individual has a degree or that school from which the degree has been issued is one that is recognized in Oregon, there would be a fee for that service. And if the person did not was not willing to pay that fee, they would not receive the service.
Is there, Madam Chair, is there, if I may ask the agency, if there's anything else they would want us to be aware of about this particular proposal?
I'm not sure if you're on this item.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Alan Contreras, Administrator of the Office of Degree Authorization. The basic problem here isn't that we can't charge a fee for a public request for information or for some of the publications we do or things like that. The basic problem is that a lot of the contacts we get, I think there were over 90 of them last year, are kind of like 911 calls. For example, I had a call from someone who works for the Department of Corrections in Umatilla County, and that person said to me, "Is a degree from such and such a school a valid PhD?" Well, the answer was no, it's a bogus California diploma mill. What he then went on to say is so-and-so, who is a counselor working in corrections in Umatilla County, is using a PhD from this school as a credential here, which is illegal, and I'm supposed to enforce that. The problem is I can't charge the person who called me a fee. I mean, you don't want to charge somebody a fee for reporting an illegal act. And I can't charge the user of the degree a fee, obviously. We can, you know, we send them a cease and desist letter and things like that. So that's the great bulk of what this general fund is for, is the enforcement actions. Now, some of it is for general requests.
I'm not fully understanding why, if the example you gave, mm-hmm. a government agency calls you and has a question about a credential that's going to require you to do what appears to be some degree of research mm-hmm. and come up with the answer, why is it not appropriate to charge them a fee for that?
It isn't the agency, Madam Chair, that calls me. It's a private individual or an employee who calls
me. Well, and then I would simply then say, if a private individual calls you and is asking you a question that's going to require you to do some research to get an answer that is going to be a benefit to them, why isn't it appropriate to charge them a fee to do that?
Madam Chair, if I might, Brian Clem, Chair of the Commission, we talked about this, and it really would be like charging your snitch a fee instead of paying them for giving you the tip, meaning they generally don't have anything to gain per se. That, you know, if they think that somebody's doing a crime, and so they're calling you and saying, "I think this guy, I don't think he's a PhD at all. He sure doesn't sound like one to me." And you look it up and say, "Yeah, you're right." And we could try it, but our revenue is based on thinking most people would just not call once we said we're not going to look into that unless you pay something.
So what would be the purpose then of this person knowing that the PhD was bogus?
We would then enforce on it.
And what would be the method of enforcement?
There are several approaches, Madam Chair. Alan Contreras again. The commission has the authority to issue a fine to the individual user, which goes into the general fund. That hasn't happened, but it may in the future. We can go to the Attorney General and say, use the Unlawful Trade Practices Act in this situation. We are sort of the investigative arm for all sorts of state agencies and other public entities here. They don't do this in-house.
If I might interject, you have already the statutory authority to fine this individual for fraudulently putting this degree on his resume or his application or whatever?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Then why could you not have the amount of the fine be equal to the amount of money that it costs you to do the research?
If I might, we can do that. The current policy has been to give them one chance to stop, and if they don't stop using it, then we would go to a fine. And I guess to really make money on this, we would need to not give them a chance, probably, because most people stop once they get a letter from the government telling them you're in a lot of trouble. Stop using your fake internet degree. So, you know, we would need to probably just hit them right off the bat with a fine to actually make some money.
Madam Chair, if I may, Alan Contreras again. Also, I am not certain if under state law right now a civil penalty enforced by a state agency can be retained by the agency. I think it goes to the general fund automatically. Is that, Mr. Bender, is that correct?
I think that is correct.
I don't know if this bill could be used as a mechanism to change that policy. I'm seeing a shake of the head up there.
No, we couldn't use this bill to change that policy. That would have to be in a substantive bill such as 437, which is now coming to the House. I think there are policy issues involved that the committee would want to think about, too, in terms of having, typically I know that the state does not allow entities that collect fines to use them for their budgets, to operate their budgets, so that not to give them an incentive just to levy fines for that purpose.
Senator Mesley.
I'm trying to sort this out a little bit in my mind, and it would seem to me that the employer is someone who ought to be interested in whether their employees have valid credits or not. And I guess if they expect that at some state place in the process, they ought to be the ones that would pay for the service.
Senator Gordley?
Well, in the case that has... Thank you, Madam Chair. In the case that Mr. Contreras has used as an example... what I hear is someone, I call him a whistleblower,
right. Exactly.
Who contacted you, got a Department of Corrections employee who's there using a phony PhD, and so you're really glad that person called, first of all.
Exactly.
We certainly don't want to charge him for having called. We don't even know if he was employed by the agency, or do we? Employed by the Department of Corrections?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordy, in this case, I do know that because the person, at least the person, identified himself as an employee of the Department of Corrections.
Okay. Well, let me ask another question. What happened in this case? Is that person with the phony PhD still working for the Department of Corrections?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the person is not. We sent them a cease and desist letter. We had contacted the corrections administration here in Salem. The person is no longer employed there.
Okay. And if I might add, Madam Chair, most of what we do in that regard, I think, would go away under the theory that we would be able to collect fees. If we can figure out some way to do it, it would be nice to have the authority to do it, but in reality, I think you're going to end up cutting 74% of our general fund for this activity, and we'll get back maybe $4,000 or $5,000 of it by getting a deal going with the employment department or someone who could afford it, potentially. And then the rest of these folks just will call and we won't answer.
So what percentage of the credentials that you check are for government agencies?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in 2002, I tracked exactly what we got in the way of inquiries. 42% of the inquiries we received in validation cases and accreditation cases were from public agencies inside the state of Oregon. They aren't all state. Some of them are school districts, city, county, whatever. I'd say probably three-quarters of that is state. It's at 42% of the total.
And what's the other 54% or 56%?
That is 42% is from private the private sector. That can be either a private business or a private individual calling in their personal capacity. 16% are from colleges and universities of one kind or another. We don't separate the publics and privates there.
If you have the entities that are outside of state government calling you to check on a degree, why is it not possible at that point to say it costs, I don't know, $100 or whatever you decide is the average cost of doing the research, and if you want us to check that, we'll bill you that amount of money? Is that a problem?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if it were a sort of generic inquiry like that saying, is a degree from such and such a school valid for use in the state of Oregon? Yes, we can charge a fee for that. I don't see a big problem with that. Problem comes when they call and they say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and this person at this address is using a fake PhD. Can you do something about it? There's not really a mechanism through which I can bill anybody for that. And my statutory duty says, when somebody reports somebody violating the law, I'm supposed to send them, you know, send them a cease and desist letter and start the process.
Well, wouldn't it just simply change the pathway that the request came so that you wouldn't have necessarily a call directly from a whistleblower, but you would have a call from someone in the affected agency requesting rather than the whistleblower?
I suppose if I could design a process from scratch that said, you know, only a designated agency person is allowed to call, that might work. The problem is that sometimes the officials who are using the bogus degrees are very highly placed in agencies or their employment, and nobody is going to officially report on them. It requires a whistleblower kind of situation.
I would anticipate, though, that those types of situations would be the rarity. That you would, unless it's the director of an agency, there's always someone to go to above, you know, if that's your report to, you could go above that. I would submit to you that there is a way to make this workable so that general fund isn't being used to subsidize the program, but it would require rethinking the way that the program operates, and I would anticipate that it would be that instead of the current situation where if you're dealing with a state agency, rather than having someone in the agency call and say, I've got wind of this or I've got a reason to believe this, can you check it out, that they would need, because there would be an authorization needed to have that charge be accepted by the agency, they would need to go to somebody in the agency that had the authority to indebt the agency for the amount of the fee, and that it would just simply change the pathway that the request came through to you.
Madam Chair, it would be conceivable to do that, but most agencies don't like this kind of thing happening. It is embarrassing to them to find out that their HR process didn't screen out people. It isn't going to be the cost that prevents them from doing it. It's almost always going to be a desire to avoid embarrassment for having done something stupid and hired somebody with a fake degree. So getting a sign-off in an agency setting of that kind is going to be tough. And we have a fair number of cases that are very highly placed, senior college officials, senior police and education officials. I had one that was a finalist for the head of DEQ. So.
And I would also submit to you that the liability issues to the agencies of allowing people to continue with fraudulent credentials would be something that would, I'm sure, cause them to want to come forward and have the issues be resolved. I think that embarrassment is one thing, but liability is a very separate issue here.
That is a good point, Madam Chair, and that fortunately does happen in some cases.
Representative Bates?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm not sure how, when we're dealing with billion-dollar budgets, we end up having a huge discussion on $200,000, but we always go there. I do have a question. You, in your, budget, you have about $280,000 with other funds and then $415,000 with general funds. And I assume the $200,000 we're talking about comes out of those general funds. Is that correct?
That is correct, Representative Bates.
$280,000 you have from other funds is a result of reviewing programs and new programs you review. Is that correct? You charge a fee for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, we do. That's been true since the inception of the program in its current form in 97. It ranges from $2,400 to $4,800 per review.
Madam Chair, I would think that there's another group that's interested in this process continuing. That's legitimate universities and colleges and trade schools that are operating in the state now. They want this investigative thing to continue because they don't want to be in a situation where they're competing with bogus operations. Have you considered the possibility of leveling a fee on the existing institutions to continue this program? There's enough of them that wouldn't be very much for each institution, and that would be a backfill for your program.
I have not considered raising the fees on existing schools in order to support the anti-diploma mill operation. That is a mechanism that we could use. While we could not charge a fee to the trade schools and others, there might be some way to approach that issue.
We don't. Madam Chair, would that be a possible solution?
We could not.
I think that there are a number of possible solutions, and that I don't personally see this as an issue of losing the ability to check degrees. I think this is merely an issue of the agency needing to think about it in terms of a service for which a fee is going to be charged and figure out how to make that fee.
I would agree with Madam Chair. I was thinking that the group most impacted is the existing institutions that want to be protected. And they should have a responsibility to help fund this also.
Representative Bates, or Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I think we couldn't do that now except to the people who are applying for new programs. That's the only way for us to capture money would be when they're asking for a program review. But let's say OSU, my alma mater, doesn't do any program reviews for, you know, a decade. We couldn't get it from them. But I see what you're saying. I agree with you. We just couldn't do it now. We'd have to have your help in saying everybody kick in.
I think it's late in the session. It's going to be pretty hard to do that of that nature.
Yeah.
You may want to consider that in the future. This program doesn't work the way the chair is recommending.
Further discussion on the Office of Degree Authorization? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Ms. Jones, you have the information on the grant request relating to foster youth.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Jones, Legislative Fiscal Office. There was a CHAFE grant for which it was projected that between $250,000 to $375,000 would be set aside to go directly towards student scholarships for higher education. And it would account for a maximum award of $5,000 for between 50 to 75 youth.
Senator, did you have any further questions?
Thank you. Just a follow-up. Can those youth be former foster youth, or was that part of the designation in the grant?
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, that's correct.
It is. Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Further questions for Ms. Jones?
And I'm wondering if the folks from the Scholarship Commission were aware of the grant? No?
They are now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking your time. Any further discussion on the former foster youth scholarship piece? Let's go ahead, Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 5, the co-chair's budget contains an additional $100,000 general fund reduction in the administration for administrative support of the agency. LFO recommends that the subcommittee reduce the general fund appropriation for operations by $100,000 with the understanding that the agency will work to distribute the reduction among the administrative grants and scholarships and information services program areas to best preserve the ability of the agency to execute its statutory functions.
Questions on the administrative reductions? The next issue, committee members, is a new issue that's come forward fairly recently, and it, I think, is going to be quite important to the agency.
Recommendation 6 refers to this, and that is that the agency has informed us that there is a deficit in its ongoing budget for administering the Federal Student Loan Guarantee Program, which is formerly known as the Federal Family Education Loan Program. This is a program that is operated by the agency with without general fund support. It's entirely financed by or through the fees that are generated from the agency's participation in the program as a loan guarantor. Because of this, the agency is reviewing its participation in the program, and it may be required to relinquish some of or much of its involvement in that program. The actions the agency will take to address this problem are not known at this time. Because of this, LFO is recommending that the agency, or that you recommend the agency, and direct them to report to the emergency board on the options the agency is considering and the actions it has taken to address its continued participation in the Federal Student Loan Guarantee Program. We've suggested this language in the following budget note. The Commission shall report to the Emergency Board on the status of its participation in the Federal Family Education Loan Program no later than October 2003. The report shall include a description of the financial conditions that require changes in the agency's participation in the program, a description of the options the Commission has considered or is considering to address those conditions, and a description of any actions that have been undertaken to date and their impact on students, schools, and financial institutions that participate in the program. The Commission shall then present a second report to the Emergency Board no later than June 2004 to update the Board on the agency's participation in the Federal Family Education Loan Program and to review the financial status of the program and the actions taken to address them. The Department of Administrative Services may unschedule any expenditure limitation approved for the program that will not be needed in preparation of or as a result of actions taken to address participation in the Federal Family Education Loan Program.
I would like to have the director come forward, if you would be so kind, and to give us a little background on what this situation is.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we have a payment.
For the record.
I'm sorry. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Sweetser. I'm the executive director of the Student Assistance Commission. We have a one-time payment that's due to the U.S. Department of Education October 1st of about $1.4 million. And that that is the second of two payments that came about as a result of a federal law change back in 98 that says, in the past when we've talked about the federal funds that our agency holds, the guarantee agencies throughout the nation got into a discussion with the U.S. Department of Education. They wanted some of those federal monies back, and we actually returned $10 million of those to the federal government. In 98, they passed a law that says we want guarantee agencies to recognize that those are federal funds, and we want you to establish a separate fund called a federal fund, and we also want you to establish an agency operating fund, and that will be the fund in which you pay all of your bills out of. In 98, when the law passed, there was zero money in that account. So they gave agencies the ability to transfer 6 months of operating expenses with a provision that that money get paid back to them in 2002 and 2003. We made the payment, one half of the payment last year, and because of going from zero money in 98 to now 2003, it doesn't give us as much cash reserves as we would like. So we've asked the U.S. Department of Education for a modification on that, the payment that is due October 1st. And I sent a proposal up to them, and I've had a conversation with the individual who's responsible for approving that, and she's indicated that she's fairly certain that she'll be able to work out some alternative payment arrangement with us. We also run a software system for the loan system. It's a fairly complicated process, and that contract is up at the end of December 31st, 2004. So we are going to be going into an RFP process, an evaluation process to determine whether to stay on that particular system, or there's some alternatives out there that we can pursue. In the federal program, the law recently provided some alternative ways of participating with the U.S. Department of Education. We'll be looking at those and as a part of this review process.
So I'm not clear from the explanation that you gave why there was a cash flow problem and why you didn't have reserves enough set aside to cover it.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, in 98 we started out with zero, and so we have earned enough to pay back one half of that. And we would have enough to pay back the second payment, but then it really puts us in a situation where to meet our ongoing operational expenses, it would be nip and tuck. So we've asked the Department of Education if they can modify that repayment to stretch it out a bit.
So is this an ongoing issue where you don't have enough money to cover the operation, or is this a one-time issue?
It's a little bit of both. It's the one time is about $1.4 million, and on an ongoing basis, we have system and operating costs that have increased. And but we've also taken steps to reduce staffing, reduce expenditures, and that's what this evaluative process will do. It'll give us an opportunity of finding the best path for us as a participant in the loan program.
What percentage of your staff is involved in this program?
We have about 90 staff. There's about 60 involved in the loan program.
So this is two-thirds of your staff?
Yes.
Question.
Representative Smith.
I'm not sure why in 1998 you had a zero balance. You didn't address that to my satisfaction.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Smith, before the law changed, we had one fund. It was called the Federal Reserve Fund. We had $20 million into that. Out of that, we paid lender claims on defaulted student loans as well as all of our operating expenses. So we went from a fund of $20 million down to zero because they changed the law that says we no longer want you paying your operating expenses with the federal fund.
So at that point then, just a point of personal clarification, because you had the operating funds commingled with the loan repayment funds, you
yes.
didn't have any idea that your operating funds were exceeding your allotment, or were they?
Madam Chair, no, they are not. We have done modeling for the last 10, 12 years, taking a look at our revenues and our expenditures, and our expenditures came in higher this biennium because we went through a systems conversion. We had a one-time systems conversion expense of about $1.7 million, and it wasn't until late in the process that we discovered that we could not spread those payments out over the life of the contract, that we had to pay those up front. So what we had originally anticipated being able to spread out over 5 years came due and payable at once. So that impacted our ability to make this payment.
Did I hear you say that there may be issues with the software itself there are no issues with the way the software divides up the money into the funds?
Madam Chair, no, there isn't any issue with the software. We're very pleased with the software.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I might just give you my 45 seconds, because you're now doing what I've been doing for the last 3 weeks, which is trying to understand what we're going to do, because this is not a small issue. And essentially what happens here is we're a middleman in a business that is getting out of the business, in some cases, of having middlemen. So OSU, U of O, they don't use this program anymore. They use one called direct lending. And there is no agency in the middle guaranteeing loans and collecting fees for that, because they just get it straight from the federal government. So we've been struggling for 10 years, just like everybody else who's on this side of it, to try and compete with businesses, private businesses, other guarantors. And we've lost clients and we've gotten some back. But it's not a sure thing that we're going to be able to keep doing all the functions that we've been doing now that we're in a business where middlemen are on the way out to a large degree. We've done exceptionally well, really, to be able to get some clients back from the federal program, because that's pretty rare. So what we're doing from the commissioner point of view, we have one commissioner who's a banker down in Southern Oregon, and he's basically, we're going to start meeting monthly. And, at some point we didn't think this was the commissioner's, day-to-day job, because we all have our other jobs. But at this point, we feel like there's some questions that even our people can't necessarily solve that have to do with decisions the state wants to make about where its loans are being guaranteed and do we even want to do this. So we've got a banker from Southern Oregon who's pretty sharp with his pencil, meeting with Jeff regularly now, and we're trying to figure out, but there are personnel issues, there are union right type contracts, and we're trying to very carefully go through all these things to see whether it makes sense for us to be able to do this anymore.
And I have one more question, and that was, why was this issue not brought forward during your budget presentation?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we are constantly looking at our revenues and expenditures, and up until a short time ago, I believed that we could make that payment and not find ourselves in a situation asking for the Department of Education for relief. So as we continuously look at our revenues and expenditures, it changes. It's like when we get into a situation where we model information for any program about what it costs, when you actually get to that day, it's different than what it was that you anticipated. So it's...
Oh, wait a minute.
Senator Gordon, you've been very patient.
Well, thank you. Are you saying that this came to light after we had our last meeting on the budget? Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes. We have been looking at alternatives, but the actual numbers...
The other part is fine.
Okay.
The other part I wanted to ask, I didn't hear how much is the deficit?
The payment to the Department of Education is about $1.4 million.
That's not the actual deficit, because we have cash, but that's what would put us into a deficit over time if expenses kept going the way they are and no new clients came in with more revenue.
But I'm referring here, Madam Chair, to item 6 on page 3, and it says, recently, the agency has informed the Department of Administrative Services and LFO of a deficit in its budget for...
The number would be smaller.
So that's
right.
What I'm asking about. What is that number?
It's not a negative. We actually have about a month of payable, and what we'd like to have is 3 months.
What's the number?
It's about $300,000.
Okay. Thank you.
That's positive, not negative.
The other thing, Madam Chair, that really hurt us was getting this ruling that a payment we were going to make over 5 years was all due 1 year from DAS. And it's just a sort of a policy, I guess, that if they classify it as more of a service, you can't pay it over 5 years. You need to pay for it out of that existing budget. And that was a $1.2 million hit we certainly weren't expecting and didn't just have laying around available.
Committee, we're going to be losing our quorum shortly, so let's move through this issue here. Representative Smith?
Well, you went from thinking you could make this payment over 5 years to now all of a sudden, well, what made you think that you could make the payment over 5 years? Did you get something in writing from DAS?
The agreement with our vendor was that they could do it, that our vendor would take the terms. Usually that's the person most likely to want their money faster, was your vendor. So this company that wrote our software said they could do it over 5 years.
Right.
we didn't think it would be a problem with that. So it was obviously an interpretation debate, and in this case, it's one that cost us $1.2 million accelerated.
We would be, I think, very interested in the reports that you're going to bring forward on this issue. Mr. Bender, could you go forward to the opportunity grant funding enhancement?
Yes, Madam Chair. The final item in the recommendation is the co-chair's budget includes a $8.8 million general fund enhancement for the opportunity grant program to increase the number of awards funded in the 2003-05 biennium. With this additional level of state support, the state will be eligible to receive federal matching funds as well. At the current level, there are no federal matching funds available. But we project that if you approve the $8.8 million general fund enhancement, the state would receive $1,239,605 of federal funds that are then used directly for the opportunity grant. So LFO is recommending that you increase the general fund appropriation for financial aid payments to individuals and institutions for the opportunity grant program by $8,800,000 and increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $1,239,605.
And is it also a true statement, Mr. Bender, that we, by adding more money, we cannot increase the federal funds?
That's correct. You have more than the amount required to generate the $1.239, and additional funds would not directly increase that federal.
You asked my question.
Did you have amendments you wanted to make to the budget note?
If you don't mind, I was reading what I wrote, and one of the sentences is really not correct. And, I mean, this is the second, this is the sentence that starts about halfway down through the budget note language. The last word is the, and then it continues. The commission on the next line. And what I would ask is if you would be willing to accept the following changes. The commission shall present a second report to the emergency board no later than June 2002 to update the board to update the board of the agency's participation in the Federal Family Education Loan Program. I would suggest putting a comma there and deleting the word and. So I would just read that, to review the financial status of the program, comma, and then to say to report on the actions taken to address, and then delete the word them, and just say the agency's participation in the program. I apologize for that, but I'm rereading it. But them doesn't mean anything.
Is everyone okay with conceptually amending the budget note? Let's do a motion then. I would accept a motion to conceptually amend the budget note on the Federal Family Education Loan Program as outlined by Mr. Bender.
So moved.
We have a motion. Is there discussion? Objection. Motion is carried. And what I would ask for now then is a motion to accept the LFO recommendations to House Bill 5052 as outlined in the memo dated August 4th, 2003.
So moved.
Representative Smith's made the motion. Discussion? Objection? The motion is carried. I would accept a motion to conceptually amend House Bill 5052 to add in the LFO recommendations and the appropriate numbers.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Discussion? Objection? The motion is carried. And I would accept a motion to move House Bill 5052 as amended and conceptually amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Smith made the motion. Is there a discussion? Objection? Motion is carried. Representative Smith, would you like to have the honors in full and on the House floor?
Thank you very much.
Senator Gordley, would you do the honors on the Senate floor?
Yes.
Thank you very much. This completes the work that we have right now. We have another education subcommittee that is tentatively scheduled for Wednesday morning. So if you could just kind of hold that in your tentative schedule, we'll get to you when we have that more firmed up.
We don't have one tomorrow morning then?
We do not.
Oh, okay.
We do not have one tomorrow morning.
I think that's Human Services.
Senator Mesrin.
Thank you, Madam. I just wanted to thank Mr. Clem for the treats we
You're right.
Today.
Yeah. Hopefully I won't be bringing you pears because that's still another month. But good luck to you.
Well, if we are, I need about two.
I'll bring you yours, of course.
I'll buy them.
Exactly.
And Mr. Pre-order. Do we have any further business before the committee? This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.